Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oak. We have the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Our show tonight, of course, is Whistleblowers, and it's brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, which takes place every July out in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we will be out there again this year with a panel, so look forward to that. We're going to touch on a topic here tonight that we've had our guest on another time, and I have wanted to catch up with him about the Bannister, the Honeywell Bannister facility in Kansas City, Missouri. Now, the original facility has been closed down, and they are apparently going to demolish it. One of Maurice's concerns is the debris and the ensuing pollution that will occur because of this, because the building and the grounds are highly contaminated. The people who are planning on cleaning this up, who've been given the contract to clean it up, is a company called CenterPoint. And they said that they have found soil and water contamination there at the site. And it's claiming it'll take 4 years to clean it up, to remove the toxins before the land is redeveloped for industrial warehouse distribution space. Now, to me, this reeks of our history of building military bases over toxic dump sites. Virtually every military base or installation we have is built on top of a toxic dump site. And then, of course, they install our military on there, and as they get sick, they say, well, we don't know what's wrong with you. But anyway, to me, that's just some more of the same old stuff, but in a different venue. They keep saying that they're trying to limit, marginalize the number of people who have come down sick or have died at that plant. They were told they were exposed to maybe 300 chemicals that could pose a problem. It was finally revealed that they were exposed to more than 2,400 toxins at the site. Honeywell is a federal manufacturing and technologies contractor at the Bannister Road facility, and it's owned by General Services Administration. And there at this plant, what they did, employees used to make parts for nuclear missiles at that complex. And our guest this evening is Maurice Copeland. Maurice was a 32-year man at this plant. He worked there 32 years with that. Maurice, welcome to the show.
Hello, Marty. It's glad to be here. I'm very grateful for you to ask me to come back.
Well, I've been wanting to have you back, Maurice, to follow up on this. And joining us also is Carly Walden, who is a new host on my channel on TS Radio. And she's covering, what she'll be covering, Maurice, is hospice and the danger it represents to the public. So Carly is with us also. Welcome to the show, Carly.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Marty.
Mm-hmm. Maurice,
glad to hear you.
Nice to meet you.
Maurice, since I last talked with you, and they are moving obviously ahead with this planned demolition of this building, and I know one of your concerns in our first interview was that this facility is so contaminated, the ground, the building itself. Is there any possible way? I just don't see how they can take contamination at this level and clean it up. How do you clean it up? I want to know.
Actually, the meetings that we had, the public comment meetings, which people should be familiar with, you know, having public comments when you have large issues like this that happens in your community. In the public comment meetings that we had at Honey at in Kansas City, they admitted, and anyone that could do a little research on it, go to Google Kansas City Plant or the Bannister Federal Complex, read up on it. You'll see where they said that they're not going to clean up the whole property. And there are reasons that they said that. Now, understand that we went through years of a community advisory panel, and this is very people in the United States ought to understand their government. We went through years of the community advisory panel, where we were supposed to. I was also on that panel, surprisingly, where the city and the state and the federal government were deciding how they were going to repurpose this property as to make it useful to the community and profitable to the community.
Mm-hmm.
We went through years. And understand now, CenterPoint didn't get that contract until 2015. Let's see. 2015. CenterPoint was there the whole time that we were discussing this stuff. And in fact, they played a big part with GSA in deciding what was going to happen with that place. And we decided the end result was we spent all that time and all that money, all that government money, and this community advisory panel, they were told the very first day that this property was not going to be used and that a sign would be put up that says this property is condemned. What they're virtually doing is condemning the property, because all the years that we went through on this community advisory panel, which was about 2 or 3 years, discussing what we were going to do, telling the city, having big dog and pony shows, bringing in the government from Washington, D.C., as to what we was going to do. They had layouts of mall-like projects where they were going to put businesses out there and all kind of good stuff, make it like a mall. Well, the property has been designated unlivable. You cannot have any 24-hour occupancy on that property. That is written. That is one of the edicts.
Okay.
What they decide, what they say they're going to do, it's going to be used for storage. They haven't storage. I don't know who contracted to do storage. I don't know who they haven't put out any details. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying they're going to use it for storage, Maurice, but wouldn't the material or products, whatever is stored there, wouldn't it also become contaminated?
Okay, they said the decontamination, they are going to go through a process. First of all, before they can touch the ground, they have to clean up the building, the facility. They have to clean it up from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a large facility. It's on 300 acres of property out there. The facility, I forget exactly right now how many square feet this place, the factory was, but it's a big facility.
Yes. And there's numerous buildings. I'm sorry, Maurice, there's numerous buildings there. This isn't like just one large building. There are numerous buildings there, correct?
Right. We have, even at that, some of those buildings are not going to be touched. We have a building. We had an IRS facility on this property, and it was a big place. It was a big place. I used to work there, IRS, where we did tax returns for the Region 7. Mm-hmm. That was Iowa, Minnesota, all of the surrounding states around mm-hmm. Missouri. Okay. Those people complain so much. This is prior to us moving. They complain so much about illnesses and about the property that they moved them out. They moved them out years before they did all of this stuff, even years before they even discussed closing the plant down. They moved them out.
Okay.
Also, GSA, the General Services Administration, which is there, which had the DFAS Center, which is the finance center for the Marines, they were there, and the General Services Building, which is all one building with
mm-hmm.
the Honeywell property, which is DOE, Department of Energy. Now, they never would claim that, but that's just the way it is. If you could drive a transport truck through GSA into Honeywell, that's one building. That is one building. That's how big that building is, and that's how that building was situated. We could drive a transport truck through GSA into DOE. Now, that is one building. We use that building as one building. We even went to eat lunch over there from Honeywell. We would walk out of. Yeah, so it was all one building, but they never claimed that. They still don't claim it. Even the GSA building is not, and that property on that side is not going to be cleaned up. They admitted that. It's not going to be cleaned up to the standards. They're going to tear down the building, but it's not going to be cleaned. It's not going to be torn down to the standards that the DOE building is going to be torn down. And also they found all types of contamination at GSA. GSA was the one that was the place where we went through a congressional investigation, because GSA was the one getting the attention. And I think they were getting the attention because of the deflection from the DOE side of the building. And we had five investigators. I know it was IG, CDC, EPA, Missouri Division mm-hmm. of Natural Resources, and it was another entity that did an investigation over there that we called for. Now, for mm-hmm. one thing, they shouldn't even have been doing the investigation on the GSA side. They should have been doing the investigation on the source of the contamination side.
Right.
We're the ones that contaminated the building. They found contamination in GSA. But they're mm-hmm. not going to be cleaned up. That building is not going to be cleaned up, and the grounds is not going to be cleaned up to the standards of the DOE side. Okay,
Maurice, I'm here on the EPA website concerning this, and it says the DOE NSA is implementing the remediation of soil and groundwater contamination on their portion of the Bannister
right.
Federal Complex. You always have to watch the wording on this stuff. They're telling you right there
yes,
they're not going to clean
do.
Up everything. The GSA is yeah. also conducting investigative activities on their portion of the complex. So what they've done here, as far as I can see, Maurice, they've split this up so that it's like a seven-headed beast. So
right.
while you might fight one, you still got all these other entities over here and divisions that you will also have to mount a fight with to stop them from what they're doing. It says this work is being conducted under a Missouri Hazardous Waste Management Facility, Part 1, and EPA Hazardous and Solid Waste Amendments, Part 2, and those permits are now in effect. And it says that this is that CenterPoint is the preferred partner for redevelopment portion again of the complex, and has been conducting site analysis and environmental review of the complex to frame the work needed to transfer and develop the property. Maurice, again, my question is, what lunatic thought they could go in there and clean this up to the point that any subsequent structures or businesses or anything else wouldn't be affected? I just don't understand this.
I don't understand it either. Like I said, I was on that CAP panel, and the CenterPoint told me last year, said Copeland, said, now, you know, we always favored tearing down the facility. We didn't favor bringing any buildings or any businesses in there. like they were doing their little dog and pony shows. Like I said, they were gonna put some Burger Kings and all this kind of good stuff out there, you know.
Oh my God!
And they CenterPoint said, well, we never went for that. I said, well, why would you let the process go on for 2 years? If you're the one to come that you knew, I mean, this thing was not contested. They say it was, but they never have mentioned who bid it along with CenterPoint. It never was. They can't tell me. I was on the cap panel, and they haven't told me anybody that bid it against CenterPoint to get this.
All bids are supposed to be published. You're supposed to know who bid and how much they bid, and then who won the contract. So if they can't give you anybody else, it's because this wasn't offered to anybody else, and no one else was allowed to bid.
That's right. That's right. In fact, the beginning of the process, which was – now, somebody else may know, but they know more than I do about this. The beginning of the process to rid themselves of this property in the first place, this property is supposed to be offered to universities – and other types of entities. I don't know how to put it. Philanthropic entities, but they didn't do it. That's the way to the government rids themselves of properties. It's not supposed to be done for profit making. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they said that they wasn't going to do that, and they gave good reason. Of course, it's a good reason. This is a big facility, and it's no school or anybody that's going to take over the maintenance that's going to show that they can maintain that property. That roof on that building is a $6 million preventive maintenance project every year. You know, so yeah, no one could really get this. No school, nobody else. You know, but that these are the things that they went through, even to parcel out the property. To like you said, the seven-headed beast.
Yes.
They did that because if they were going to clean up the DOE property, they would have to put this in a Superfund status.
Yes. Yep.
That's why they did that. If they would have fell under the Superfund laws, and it would take years. For them to even touch that building because of all the investigating that would have been going on, you see. So the storage pods, they showed us eight storage pods, a layout of eight storage pods. They're not saying what type of storage is going to be going on. They're not saying what company is going to be doing it. They haven't said anything about it. It was just a cute little picture that they showed that this is what they're going to do. You know.
What concerns me is, I don't care what they do to clean this up. You can't take 70 years of contamination and tell me you can scrub it up enough to where it's safe to take this down. Now, when they go to demolish these buildings, the dust, the debris is going to spread over the whole area, and given a good day when there's a lot of wind, God knows how far it will go. And to me, this is so irresponsible to do something like this. They, like I say, they know this land is horribly contaminated. And probably what they'll do out there is they'll end up putting a military base out there, because that's what we do. We cover up. It's just like a cat digging in a box. We just cover it up with some big mess and walk away. I still can't. Have you looked in at all, Maurice, to the modification of these permits? What did they modify?
I'm not the one to go there. I have people that have brought up these issues. That's one reason that we need our political help, our Congress people, and we have not gotten that at all.
Right.
Actually, they have done their little song and dance. They've done their little song and dance over the years, where GSA admitted, during those investigations that we had, they admitted, and we knew it all along. We were telling, you know, we had told GSA all along. I've been doing this, you know, I've been doing this for 17 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
So GSA and Honeywell, all along, they have been told that the things that were coming out of that building, what Honeywell was saying, what GSA was saying, it was not true. Totally not true. I mean, just flat out. Anyone that worked there knew that these people were telling falsehoods, period. Honeywell, even at one point, and this was in 2002, called me on the telephone and asked me, and the guy's name was Garrett Wilkie. He was a ES&H coordinator. ES&H is Environmental Health and Safety. He called me and said, "Copeland, look, what can we do?" He said, "Sure, we told people things that we didn't do, but what can we do? You know, we need to get this process done." You know, well, you're telling me that you lying to the people, and when you lie to the people about the contamination, the health matters of this facility, you're talking about people dying. You're talking about people not being diagnosed properly. You're talking about families that are contaminated that you're not going to test upon employee's request. You know, you're talking about a lot of things. You're talking about the health of the community. You're talking, you know, so, you know, it's a lot of issues that are just plain flat and right up front. And these politicians.
Did we lose you, Maurice?
I think we did.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, no.
Okay. Maurice?
Good.
And I'm just going to do this.
Okay.
I'm going to do this.
You cut out. You cut out on us. We lost you there for a few minutes. Yeah.
Okay. You got me
now. We're talking about the. You were talking about the politicians.
Yeah. And it cut out, huh?
Yep.
Yeah,
imagine that, Maurice.
Imagine it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about these politicians here. my congressperson, Emmanuel Cleaver, he's in the House of Representatives. He worked at Honeywell. He worked at Honeywell, and he has done nothing. He has not done a thing. The town halls, when I had town halls, he tried to claim them. These are his town halls. He's given these town halls. The one he came to. He didn't confirm. I billed him as going to be there. He didn't confirm that he was going to be there until Saturday. The town hall was on Tuesday. I was going to have the town hall anyway. And once the town hall came up, well, he claimed that this is a town hall that I threw. No, you didn't.
Oh.
No, you didn't. That's, you know, he jumped on the bandwagon, and then he still hasn't done anything. McCaskill and Senator Bond was about the best one, and the only reason that Senator Bond jumped out and he said what he was supposed to say, he said, well, Bond was going out of office. He was leaving office. He was retiring. And so he said all the right stuff. But McCaskill has done nothing at all.
She's famous for that. Yeah.
And neither. And Cleaver is worthless. I don't even know why he's there. I don't even know why he is there. You know,
Maurice, we feel that way about most politicians. We don't know why they're there either. We don't know why we have to keep paying them, because you can't get them to do anything. You know,
no. We need to think real hard. As far as Cleaver, I say, I want him to go to full Molly. I want him to do as much time there as he can. And as much as he wants, because I'm writing his story, and I'm writing his story as a worthless, good for nothing representative of the people. And I think
don't
that
hold
people
back,
will
Maurice.
See it.
Don't hold back.
Yeah.
Don't hold back. Tell us what you really think.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know,
go.
And I have other issues. I have another issue.
Okay.
And this issue may shake up a lot of people because we're very union in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We think union is the best thing since sliced bread. You know. Well, the bread's spoiled. We have a union. We had a union at Honeywell, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. They have not said a word in 17 mm-hmm. years for standing mm-hmm. up for these people. They haven't done a thing. Mm-hmm. They haven't done a
thing.
But
they collected those dues, didn't they?
They done. Yep. They get their tithes. They get their tithes and offering. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they collect them dues. They get their tithes and offering. They get their tithes and offering before people get their paychecks.
Yep.
You know? So mm-hmm. I have a problem. Well, why haven't they? Why haven't they stepped up for these people? And they knew. Mm-hmm. They knew. They should have known. I don't think they plumb stupid. They should have known. They should have known that sometime during this process, some union was going to step up because we had many unions there. We had one to cover the DOE side, which embodied a lot of unions, skilled trade union, builders and trades union, and everybody fell under the umbrella of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Well, let me tell you, this month a letter was supposed to be delivered to Congress from the union that covered the GSA people, and they're standing up for their people. Now, the question should come out to Honeywell, to the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, what's your problem? You got all these people. You got all these people complaining and dying and filing claims and winning their claims. And you, the union, hasn't done a thing. And we know the reason, I do, we know the reason why the union hadn't done anything, because that would convict them. Because all these years, they've been standing up for the company. And they've been saying that they were on all the safety committees that the company had, and that they were in cooperation with the company on all the safety processes and procedures that they did. Well, I'm glad they said that, because Honeywell, Bendix, whichever company was name was on the building, admitted that they didn't take care of the people properly, and that's one reason that we have the program going on. So the union speaking out front, standing up for the company, saying that they did everything possible. Well, they're lying right out front. And then Honeywell comes and lies and tells the truth behind them and said, yeah, no, we didn't. We didn't take care of the people. That's why we had this compensation program and this medical program going on, which is the EEOICPA. EEOICPA. Beautifully written by Bill Clinton.
Uh-huh.
Bill Clinton. That was one reason that, you know, you can tell I don't like politicians, right?
Yeah, well, just a little bit.
You're
a good company.
I was kind of rooting for Hillary Clinton. Because the only reason I was doing it, I said, oh, maybe she get in there and I can, you know, poke her a little bit. Because her husband is the one that wrote this thing, and
mm-hmm.
the government is not enforcing it properly, you know, the claims process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Maurice, can you talk a little bit about what people were getting sick with, what they are sick with, and what they died from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They tried what was done when they brought the program from the EEOICPA to Honeywell. And this is the way they brought it out at Honeywell, which I was a manager, and I went to the meetings before we introduced it to the plant. They wanted to focus on a disease called borreliosis. That's where they were, the distraction was. And
okay.
It's a lot of it's a lot of reasons for that.
Well,
borreliosis.
Can you tell
go ahead.
The disease again? Oh, the disease one more time. The distraction.
The borreliosis.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And borreliosis, it's like the flu. It's like the flu. It's like pneumonia. It's like a chronic bronchitis. It all mimics that, and it's disguised, and it has that effect. And so, you know, all these years that people work there, think about it. This is a 70-year industry. All the years that we have been subjected to all this stuff, well, you know, we people at that plant, we had what we call a 10-year, 20-year flu. You know, you just this. This is what you had. Well, subsequently, of course, when the program started, well, we found out a lot of people have what they call beryllium sensitivity, which is it's like having, you know, you have HIV, you do not have AIDS, you know.
Right.
Well, HIV, you're going to have AIDS, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people, you know, they put that off. But the brain cancers, the pancreatic cancers, the bladder cancers, we had 2,004, just like you told them, we had 2,410 chemicals, toxic substances, and this is radioactive stuff and everything else at that plant that they did not reveal to us until last year. It was 2016.
Okay.
Because 2015, December of 2015, that was the number of chemicals that they had revealed that we had been subjected to in Honeywell. Well, in 2016, in fact, it was December of 2015. In 2016, it was one of those, oops, oh, no, it was 2,400. They reported 910 chemicals. 901 chemicals up until 2015, December.
Mm-hmm.
January 2016, it was one of those oops, like I said. Oh, no, we're sorry. The number was 2,410. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, now that's a big change. How could you not see this, especially after having nine revisions, the chemicals and toxic substances were reported on what they call a SEMS, a site exposure matrix. The site exposure matrix tells you what toxic materials and chemicals and substances that you have at the site. In 17 years, first you report 300. Then, let's say 6 years later, oh, well, it's 600. And then all the way up until 2015, they revised that nine different times until it hit 901 chemicals, which they took all the way up until 2016.
Mm-hmm.
That's obscene to do something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is your federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is your federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Here, Maurice, I've got some emails here.
Yes.
And people are asking what was actually manufactured at that facility. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'll talk about it.
Okay.
Kansas City plant has always been said to be designated a non-nuclear plant. We manufactured the non-nuclear components to the bomb and,
oh,
and to the missiles. And we were and still are at this new facility. We're the number one parts producer in the nuclear weapons industry. We were number one. We are very proud of that. And we did a good job. We were the number one parts producer in the whole nuclear weapons industry. So that means we're the number one parts producer in the world. Okay? The misnomer is non-nuclear. Just because we're a non-nuclear plant does not mean that we didn't handle radioactive materials.
Right.
Because, yeah, and not only that, the work that we did there, like, you know, we'd have missiles and out in the field, might be out in a silo somewhere, and every once in a while you would bring one back, and we would examine it. In other words, we would remove components from it to see how those components were holding up and all this good stuff. But these things are contaminated. And they also had radioactive materials in it and radioactive components. Not only that, we machined depleted uranium at that plant all the time. I did myself. And not only that, we did, you know that you got national security, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have national security. So that means I can't say some things.
Right.
You know, I can't. Yeah. And not only that, to let the people know about the grounds out there so you can know what went on at that plant, on that property. That plant, that property was designated a landfill. This is back from the beginning, 1949. That plant was designated a landfill for the Atomic Energy Commission. Imagine that.
Oh, God. So it was already, you already sitting in a toxic soup when they built this place.
Yeah. Right. And then when we were having our public comment meetings back in 2015 all the way up until today, they finally revealed it was in May. In fact, it was May the 17th of 2015. May the 17th. They informed us at a public comment meeting that the Corps of Engineers was currently, at that time, at that very time, digging out and testing the landfill on the property.
Oh,
now,
Lord.
Wait a minute. Yeah, wait a minute. They were asked when they revealed that to us. Now, this was a shock. How can you do something like that and you not inform the community around there what's going on? You got the Corps of Engineers, which is charged with remediating these radioactive landfills. That's what they do. That's what they that's what the Corps of Engineers do. And you're not telling these people anything. So we asked them, what are you expecting to find? What are you looking for? What are they finding out there? And this is at one of the CenterPoint meetings, one of the public comment meetings. And okay, so they want a joke, and they said, we're looking for explosives. We're looking for, you know, that's cute. You know, is that the way you play with the people? You know, and all of what I'm telling you about that, you can verify that with they don't know who's talking to them. This was a reporter that asked them that.
Right.
This was a reporter on a radio station. You know, so we've got a lot of documentation of some just disrespectful stuff that these people have said and done. Yeah.
Well, Maurice, what my question is, if they're testing and there's this toxic dump sitting under this plant that's also toxic, all of this is leaching out into the ground. This is not a containment center. It's simply a hole in the ground. Now, one of the things I found out, like Kaiser Permanente out there in California, after the earthquake, the initial hospital actually split in half. They continued to operate it with tarps and everything else till they built the new facility, which is built over the top of a toxic waste dump. Mm-hmm. And the, what I found out in researching that was that if a, even if a toxic waste dump is there, they aren't required to tell you. They don't have to tell you that's there, and the only way you may know that it's there is if there is a prohibition on construction that prohibits you from going down further than 8 feet. And that's the first signal that underneath there is a toxic waste dump. And so, you know, that whole hospital out there is contaminated. A lot of their employees have died from all sorts of strange ailments. They have carried this mold that grows from this home with them. Their family members have been affected. Now, in this Honeywell plant, how far downstream did this contamination go in the families?
Right. Yeah, you know, right. We have a guy that's done some great research on that, and that is actually, you know, his main thing. He doesn't really want to talk about anything else but the groundwater and the drain off from that plant.
Right.
He would be a lovely, lovely person for you to have on. To talk about that, I can send you some information on him. But you know, I don't know much about that. But he is very adamant about, giving the people the knowledge of what's gone on in that plant, on that property. He lives very close to that property.
And, well, underneath that property is the Ogallala River, which is the water supply. It comes out of Canada all the way to Texas. This is our water supply here in the Midwest, and that plant and that toxic dump site are sitting right over the top of it. Like I say, this isn't a containment pit. It's not like there's some sort of lead walls or something that's going to contain this stuff. It is simply an open pit in the ground that they fill up and then cover over. So all of this is leaching out. That aquifer is underneath it. So the contamination from this has to have been spread far and wide.
Think about it. For all these years. One of the other little cute thing that they said, you know, and I use words like this. One of the little cute things that they said, well, we have what they call the Little Blue River and Indian Creek. That's right next. It's right on the same property. This is, I mean, you might as well call it the same property, too. It runs right down there. The access to the Missouri River, that's where it runs to, is on the far outskirts of Kansas City, on the east side. Therefore, Kansas City water treatment will not receive any of the runoff because it would move. It would be moving east toward St. Louis, because that's where the outlet from the Missouri River. That's where the inlet from the Missouri River that dumps this Little Blue River into the Missouri River. So it's not our water treatment plant is back west. So I guess that's supposed to satisfy people in Kansas City that whatever goes on or will have gone on at the Bannister complex, we never received any of the contamination from that plant because it went east. To Columbia, and to Mississippi. Yeah.
Well, you'd have to know about groundwater seepage and how water moves through the ground to fill up, like, your rivers and your streams and your ponds and all of that. It doesn't just, you know, like when it rains, it doesn't just rain over the river. You know, there is groundwater seepage. The water ground is full of water, and it moves through cracks and crevices in the earth and comes up in these streams and rivers and everything else. So the idea that somehow, because the plant is located west, they wouldn't have been subjected to this contamination is erroneous. If that's in the ground and it's seeping into the ground, the groundwater itself – will carry it to wherever it can find an outlet, wherever it can find an opening, it will take it to. You know, this makes me think like out at Maurice out at Camp Lejeune, which, of course, is built over a toxic waste dump. And they found out the water supply out there was severely contaminated. And here these guys are showering in it. They're drinking it. They're doing everything mm-hmm. else. And they knew it for years.
Right.
And never said anything. I don't understand this mindset that as long as it's
right.
for the government and we're defending the freedom, then blah, 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 it's all right to poison people, to expose them
right.
unnecessarily to these hazardous
right.
wastes. Where did we get the idea that in the name of national security, it's okay?
That's right.
Well, you know, I'm a veteran. I'm a veteran. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always knew, we said that little oath, right? And
yep.
we always knew that we were expendable.
Yes.
We were expendable. And they made that clear. In fact, they've made that clear to me in my years as dealing with this process, going to Washington, D.C., and sitting
mm-hmm.
in meetings with the Labor Department, John Vance, and other people, that Copeland, you are a veteran, and you know, in war, this is what these people had nerve enough to say to me. I want y'all to
mm.
understand this.
Mm.
In war, people are going to die. Oh, and
as
I
long
have
as
a
it
comeback.
Isn't us. Yes.
I have a comeback. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan said, drop that wall, Gorbachev.
Mm-hmm.
The war is over. The Cold War is over. Well, this was still going on after 81 or whenever they did that? 91?
Yeah.
I don't know when Reagan did.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
This was still going 80s. On. You're not revealing anything, and these people are still dying. The war is
yes.
over. So tell me that. You know, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I knew what I could be contaminated with. I guess I didn't. You know, I didn't, but I mean, there wasn't nothing I could do about it. I'm your property. I am a GI. I'm a government issue.
Issue.
So
yeah.
I have to suck it up. That's all. But these people don't have to suck this up. They didn't ask for this. Like
right.
I said, Clinton wrote this up beautifully. Clinton said in the EEOI-CPA, and this is just as plain as day, he said that we subjected these people in the nuclear weapons industry to contaminations and exposures unknowingly to them. So every day you went to work, every day that we went to work building these nuclear components and nuclear weapons, the people down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the people down in Pinellas, Florida, the people down in Mound City, Mound in Ohio, the people at Rocky Flats. Look here, I want the people that are listening here, y'all know what I'm talking about because you have these places in your state. You have the
yep.
same. You have the same people complaining just like I'm complaining. Start listening to them. Get behind these people. Look,
mm-hmm.
these people won the Cold War. We're veterans. Mm-hmm. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I'm a Cold War veteran. The United States government subjected us just so that we could win the Cold War, so we could have more weapons than the biggest and the baddest. And we do. We got the biggest
mm-hmm.
and the baddest weapons. Ain't nobody going to ever have as many weapons as we got, nuclear
mm-hmm.
weapons as we got. We have it. Ain't nobody else going to have it. You don't have to worry about Korea. You don't have to worry about Iran. You really don't. What is one weapon going to do against ours? Nobody is going to, you know, so I'm not going to go there. But you understand what I'm saying? We did this. We made ourselves the baddest things on the planet at the expense of your next-door neighbor.
Yes,
your
thank
next
you.
Your next-door neighbor that had brain cancer, your next-door neighbor that had leukemia, because
mm-hmm.
they were subjected to all of these chemicals that
mm-hmm.
were not handled properly, admittedly, by the federal government. That's who
the worst
you're,
part
that's
of it
who
is,
you're standing.
The worst part of it is, Maurice, they don't care. They do not care. Yeah. Are you there, Maurice?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. The thing is, they don't care. They don't care if you get sick, if I get sick. In 2003, after 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld, I think one of the most horrendous people ever to walk the planet, changed the DOD regulations. Yeah. And he said that now they can, you know, if you get exposed to something or if they experiment on you with something, it's okay. Basically, what his new regulation said, they can test on you or subject you to anything without informed consent. They don't ever have to tell you they did it. They don't ever have to admit their wrongdoing to do anything. When you mentioned about being government-issued property, I've tried to tell many people this, Maurice, that talk about signing up for the military. When you sign up, when you sign that contract, and this is a contract, you have expatriated yourself for the duration of that contract. You are no longer a U.S. citizen, not that you ever were, because those only live in Washington, D.C., but you're not. You can't even claim you're an American national. You belong. You have just sold yourself to the Department of Defense, and they own you.
That's right.
And that's why, like, if you get in a fight somewhere and somebody blacks your eye, the person who blacked your eyes is going to get charged with damaging government property.
That's right.
Not for assault, but damaging government property. You become property.
Right.
Rumsfeld's his explanation for all this, his rationale was, as government property, as property, you willfully signed that contract. You willfully gave up your citizenship for the duration of that contract. Once you did that and you accepted your lot as property, you don't have any rights.
This is some of the
tricks that the government plays on us, the using and abusing us. But have you ever noticed, Maurice, none of their kids ever go in the service? None of their kids ever go to war? Did you ever notice that? You know, they never go. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Carly, did you have something you wanted to say?
I just wanted to thank you, Maurice, for coming out and sharing this information, and thank you for, you know, for opening all of our eyes to this. This is unbelievable. I just wanted to thank you, and thank you for your service.
Yes.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Really.
I accept it. I accept it with mixed feelings. But I accept it, and I accept it for my other soldier brothers that sacrificed more than I did in Vietnam.
But it's terrible, you guys.
Yeah. You know.
Well,
Maurice,
that's it. This you talk about being in Vietnam. My first husband was in Vietnam, suffers to this day from Agent Orange, and now, knowing what a deadly, deadly toxin that is. We're spraying all of our agricultural fields with it. We are saturating everything with it. We have entire families out here where I live, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, the kids and granddads, all dead. All of them dead on these farms. The whole family wiped out. I just don't get it.
You're in Minnesota, right?
Yes.
It's a shame, you know. And the thing is, here I am now. Just like I said, you heard me as a Vietnam veteran. Hey, I suck it up. I do receive $100 a month on my ears.
Oh.
As far as the Agent Orange and the post-traumatic stress and all that good stuff, I don't get anything. I have not even fought for anything. I haven't fought for it, even though I know I got problems. Okay.
Yes.
I slept in Agent Orange every day.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I'm blessed that I have not suffered like a lot of the other people did.
Yes.
So I suck it up. I did it. I volunteered to go to Vietnam, but I did not volunteer for these people to subject me to the stuff out there at Honeywell, at Bendix, and not tell me how to take care of myself after leaving that plant, and did not tell me how I should be cautious as to how I touch my family when I worked at that plant. At that facility, they had us taking materials outside of that plant and taking it home with us, never letting us know how contaminated this stuff was. Old tooling. They even sold this stuff. They sold excess materials, you know, like we'd have too much aluminum. We'd have old fixtures that we would sell to industry out here that wanted to buy the materials, the old metals and stuff like that. We sold that stuff to these people. We sold them. Okay. We would have garage sales. We would have garage sales. It was like a Chiefs football game. People would come out and camp out from all over the state to buy tooling, to buy cutters, to buy old, you know, end mills and lathe tools and all kind of stuff, old fixtures, old jigs, so that they could adapt them to their business or to access the materials. We did that. We sold that stuff to the public, and we publicized it all across the state. We took we're very good, you know, and they love to brag about the good things that they do for the community, right?
Uh-huh.
They love to do that. You know, it makes them feel good. We donated the computers off the floor, off the manufacturing floor, to different institutions in Kansas City.
Oh,
these
good
computers
Lord.
Were contaminated. They were contaminated. They were on the work floor. They were in these departments that used all types of exotic materials and chemicals. I know. I packaged them up. I wrapped them up in cellophane. I put them on skids to be shipped out and shipped to these places. That's another reason that I don't like a manual cleaver, because we ship computers to his church to be
used. Oh, my God.
Yes, right. And they were there in his church. He knows it. He knows it. If he doesn't know it, he knows it now. He knows it. And to be used in a school that we had adopted here. And everyone, not only that, we had formed a committee of people to help this school. We adopted the school. And all of those guys, every last one of them, except for maybe one or two, and I'm one of them, are dead. And they died at a very young age. And they died of the cancers. They died of the cancers that are attributed to the chemicals at that plant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. Oh, yeah. It's some ugly stories here. It's some very ugly stories. I can't go through the whole 30 years.
Right.
But we know, they know, even the employees know. And that disheartens me, too, because they will talk to me and they will talk to other people, but they will not talk publicly because they're scared of the little, don't you know? You shouldn't be saying this because you signed a paper where you're not supposed to do this. Well, you know what? So what? I've been in that plant, and I know, you know, we know who's listening. I've been in that plant maybe 5 or 6 times since the year 2000, which they told me, Copeland, you'll never get back in here. Yes, I did, because I know what I'm doing. And I've been in that plant maybe 6 times since then. Mm-hmm. And I had to sign a little paper when I went in there, you know, again, that tells me I'll keep my mouth shut. Well, I ain't going to shut up. No. No, I'm not. And I tell them when I sign the paper. They can bring that paper to me right now. And I sign it, and I say, you know I'm not going to live by this. I'm not going to do it. And I'm not trying to be no hero or nothing like that. I just have to be myself.
Yes.
If you know what you got here, and you know what's been going on, don't stick that thing in front of me. Don't put that paper in front of me. That's what you
do.
Right.
Okay.
Wow. And why would they want you to keep quiet if what they were doing was on the up and up? You know, I just don't get this. Why would they want to gag you if they're telling the truth and everything's okay? What would be the issue? I really don't understand. You know, what gets me here, too, is, again, let's get back to this war thing. The idea, as you said, Maurice, that we have, you know, mega weapons. What the hell do we need all this for? For what? For what? If you blow up, if you used even some of those weapons, you've contaminated the entire globe so badly that it's, you know, we're all going to croak anyway. What is the point in having all of this? And not only does it represent a danger to people in other places, it represents a danger to us.
Yes,
and that,
that's
you know,
right.
People never stop to think about that. The fact that this stuff is sitting here in our country many times. I mean, what if something misfired? What if something blew up? You know, what if there was an earthquake, a volcano? You know what I'm saying? Anything could happen.
Right.
And these things detonated.
Right.
You know?
And
I don't get
and
it.
And people, and they get all these terminal diseases.
Yes.
You
get all these diseases.
You know, I just spoke. I just spoke at a church. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And a guy was supposed to interview me. And, of course, you know, we had talked prior to. And he just let me go. He just, when I went to speak there, he just let me go like you do, Marty, you know. But he said, Copeland, he said, it's one thing I want to say to you because I heard you say it. You said we ought to let everyone produce nuclear weapons.
Yes.
I said, yeah. He said, because then they would find out what they're doing to their own people. Because when you produce them, when you make it, you're killing your people first. And we know that in the nuclear, weapons industry. We know they will never tell you. Think about this. We were in a Cold War, right? Think about this. Any war, all wars have one thing in common, and that is that they are designed to kill people.
Yes.
That's what war is. Why haven't they gave you the statistics of how many people died during the Cold War and the nuclear weapons buildup? The reason why is because everybody that died was in the industry. In order to handle these materials and to make these weapons, the people within the industry are going to be the ones subjected to the radiation. They're going to be the ones subjected to the plutonium. They're going to be the ones subjected to all of the uranium, the benzene, the toluene, the trichloethylene, and the vinyl chloride, and the PCBs, and the BPAs. We're the ones that touch it first, and we're the ones that die. Why don't they give the statistics of the disability retirements that came out of this industry during the term of this industry? I have asked them, please, you want me to shut up. All you have to do is reveal the disability retirements from 1980 to 2000 and let the people know what those people were disabled for, what cancers they had. I don't want to know their names. Just give me the number. Just give us the number. The nuclear weapons industry, if they gave you the number of the deaths that came out of our industry simply by building these weapons, and the testing and all that other stuff. Oh, all no war could come close to it. No war. I just posted a thing about they got problems in Texas, right?
Yes.
With the radium. Mm-hmm. Did you read that? Okay. They got problems.
No, I haven't seen that one. I saw the one on Fort Dietrich and cross posted it. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I got one about the problem they got down in Texas, and the problem is radium. Radium.
Mm-hmm.
Texas is saturated. The groundwater is saturated with radium, and they got big problems all over Texas. I mean, it's all over the, especially the eastern part, the southeastern part, all the way down. Well,
okay.
Let me tell you what really these things hit me. 2000, they're saying this is bad. They're saying this is bad. 2000 cancers. 2,000 cancers they found, and they got it. They got the marks where the areas are. Well, let me tell you, 2,000. You can go. Let's just go back. If we want to do that, let's just go back in Kansas City, the Bannister Federal Complex, that 300 acres. All right, give me the statistics on the cancers of people in that plant. From the 1980 to today. Come on. 2000? Come on. That's nothing. But we're in arms over that. But yet, we cannot zero in on these nuclear weapons facilities and say all of the cancers, all of the diseases that came out of these plants. 2000 is nothing. And I'm not belittling that, but 2000 is nothing compared to what. And I'm just saying this, right? This is some little novice nobody, but I swear to it. And any time that they do it. They don't want to do it because you'll see that I'm telling the truth. I worked out there long enough that I saw them guys dropping like flies. I saw them dropping like flies. You know, and I know how many, you know, I looked at the, you know, we got a little newsletter and we have reports of deaths of old employees that worked at Bender. I mean, it was full every month. Every month that this thing came out. Come on, baby. We can do better than this.
But Maurice, let me ask you this. This new facility that they built, is from what I could glean this afternoon and doing some research on it, they're referring to it as a non-nuclear plant also.
And this
one's sitting dead in the middle of Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. Let me tell you. Oh, Marty, I'm glad you said that because I hope somebody from Johnson County is listening. I hope. I always say it. The one that's sitting in the middle of Kansas City is the old plant. That's the old plant. The new plant.
Oh, I thought the old plant sat outside. It said 12 miles south in that one report.
No.
Okay.
No. It was probably designed like that back in the 40s. In fact, I know because I was born and raised here. So, you know, where the plant is now was considered the outskirts of Kansas City, where the old plant is, back in the 40s. Yeah, it was considered the outskirts, but Kansas City is big. Kansas City grew.
Yes, it
and
is.
We grew around.
Yes, it is.
We grew around that plant. We grew around that plant. Well, the new plant. I always would say, why don't you put this plant over in Johnson County, Kansas? Johnson County, Kansas is one of the richest counties in the United States of America. It has some
there.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something. That new plant is right on the border almost of Johnson County, Kansas. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And one day, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. One day, somebody over there with affluence is going to say something about what they done. They had a little school over there in Johnson County that had asbestos problem. And these people, you know, the government the government of the cities and states, they, just like I said, they're arrogant. And so they had an asbestos problem. And it was bad. It's a bad one. So they said, we're going to go in here, and we're going to take care of it. We're going to clean it up. Well, the people over there in Johnson County said, no, you're not. You're not going to, and they were going to clean it up while the school was going on.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
They were going to, yeah. And so the people over there said, no, you're not.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not going to clean this up. Not until these kids are out of here. No school, cancel school here. You know?
Right.
So,
wow.
Yeah, people are beginning to get a little vocal on the issue. I had I had a very large town hall in December, and it was very surprising to the media, and I was even surprised that the media came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and the first line of the article that they wrote, I mean, it made me blush, you know, because this was little Maurice Copeland, calling the town hall about to banish the complex. The first line said, hundreds of people flooded the town hall. Wow, hundreds of people, really? It was full.
Wow.
Yeah, it was full. And it was overflowing, but come on, baby, don't do me that good, you know. I mean, it flattered me, you know, but it shocked them. It shocked them that it was full, and they didn't know how to estimate the crowd. But people are getting—they're getting aware around here. I've got a lot of support, but like I said, our real stumbling block is the politicians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the politicians.
They seem to be in everything, Maurice, in everything. It is politicians, the people you should be able to go to get a problem corrected, to get them to work on it and apply the necessary pressure, are the very people you might as well pass right on by, because they're not going to help.
That's true.
Yeah,
they're not going to help.
Cleaver, his campaign manager, also worked at Bendix. This was one of his campaign managers over the years. Not only did he work at Bendix, he had multi-million dollar contracts with Bendix, because he had the storage facility. I mean, not with Bendix, but with GSA. He had the storage facility for all the excess equipment there at GSA for years. Now, why would he say anything about you biting the hand that feeds you, Cleaver? They're your biggest campaign donor. And so, you know, we can go into that. And I hope somebody hears this and tell him.
Well, look at the call board is full, and we've got let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 15 calling in from your same area code. They're listening
by
phone. Yeah.
All right.
Those are just people listening by phone. Yeah.
Okay.
And
well,
that's just
I'll
from that one area
out.
Code. Yeah, that's just from your area code. And the board is full. We've got 50 callers on. So, that doesn't mean that's all that's listening. It just means that's all that can get on the board. So, but Maurice, this whole thing and this, like you said, Claire McCaskill, I've seen people go begging to that woman on numerous issues, and she just simply shuts the door. She's not going to hear it.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you what her office told me. Her main assistant here in Kansas City,
Chief of Staff,
Corey Springer, told me. She said, Maurice, if you would cut your ties with the peace movement, because they're part of my supporters, if you would cut your ties with the peace movement, we could help you much more. What? I mean, these people, my peace people were sitting there at the table. And, of course, that took me. And I looked at them. And they didn't say anything. So, of course, I said, that'll never happen. But it upset me that they, you're going to sit here in front of these people and tell me that if I cut my ties with them, that you could help save the lives of the people at the Bannister Federal Complex more. All I have to do is cut ties with them. Are you out of your mind?
Mm-hmm.
No. It's some of the stuff.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell these people. Huh?
Yeah. Maurice, this is part of the problem, just what this woman said to you. These are the same people that they're telling you what they would do. They've done it many times. They've turned on people that have supported them. They've turned on people that have helped them out. They've turned on people that have worked with them to get where they wanted to go. And see, that's what she was telling you. If you want to get ahead with this, you know, and basically what they're holding out is these employees at this plant. If you want to help these people, if you really do, Maurice, you know, you'll cut your ties with these people over here. Because otherwise we just can't help you. You know, you cut your ties with these people that are, you know, they're supporting these people at this plant and they're working for you. Get rid of them, Maurice, and then maybe we can do something. Again, the people that were expendable were the people at the plant. And they were waiting for you to do that, hoping you would take the bait. They'd turn around and say, see what he did? See what he did? He just turned on everybody. You know, and it would have destroyed you.
Right,
yeah, go ahead.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they've tried to draw me into a lot of things. They even mentioned, like I said, I'm a black person. So they even, you know, they even tried to feed me. Yeah, they fed me. Why don't? Isn't this a racial issue? You know what I mean?
What?
Because you're the one up front, and I told you know they tried to get me to go that line, so that could really just shut me down.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not going there. I mean, hell, that doesn't have anything to do with this, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about these people that worked at that plant, and everybody worked at that plant. Everyone, you know, we had all types. You know, why would I do that? But they wanted me to say that. They wanted me to bring up that issue. No, I'm not no fool. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But
don't you see this in everything, Maurice? They constantly are trying. Playing the race card. They're constantly trying to bring race into it. Say, well, you're only complaining because you're black, you know. The only reason you're raising hell about this. No, you're complaining. Mm-hmm. This is not a problem with race. This is a problem with humanity. This is a problem with everybody. This is, you know, and this, I think, is indicative of just how low these people will go, how desperate they are to shut you up. Like you said, if you'd have took the bait, you know, it would have been all over. Well, this is just This is just
Holy crap! My brother was he was a Vietnam veteran, and he was a pretty high up in the postal system. He was a postal inspector. He was a postal inspector supervisor. He had the whole West Coast from L.A. down to Guam. That was his territory. Of course, when I got good advice like that, feeding me, which is, I'm not a fool. Maurice Copeland is not a fool. I have a brother that we are cut from the same cloth. And if he did what he did with the federal government, don't you think that he's going to take care of his brother? Don't you think he's going to tell me not to fall for these okey-dokes? He was a fraud investigator. You know, and he told me a lot. You know, so now he was a Vietnam veteran. He died of three Agent Orange cancers. Mm-hmm. Never got a nickel from the federal government. Was not even ever treated by the VA. They denied him all the way. I'm not gonna fall for their little okey dokes. You know, we're gonna deal with this thing, and I want to tell the people again. there's a investigation going on in Congress. Mm-hmm. The investigation is in the House and the Senate of mm-hmm. the claims process, of the claims process, because uh-huh. you had a whistleblower. You had a whistleblower. Mm-hmm. Did y'all hear about this? You had a whistleblower from the Department of Labor. Yeah, whistleblower from the Department of Labor. I can't say his name, Seelberger or something like that. He was a lawyer mm-hmm. at the uh-huh. Department of Labor. And he blew the whistle on him, and he's mm-hmm. saying the very same thing that I'm saying. They're turning these people down on their claims mm-hmm. any way that they can, any way they can. And all the government got to do to turn people down is just turn them down. That's all they got to really do.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
discourage people. Yeah, and discourage people on filing. They're doing everything that they can to do that. And he blew the whistle on them. Nothing that I haven't mm-hmm. done in all these years, but that's cool.
It always helps if you get somebody else. Yeah, and
for sure.
You saw this. You see the same thing at the VA. They turned down these people. That Denise Cauldron, that's been on the show, has written a book about the VA called "Stall, Deny, and Hope You Die" before your claim is ever acted on. And this is exactly what they do. And apparently, they're doing the same thing in association with this facility. You know, I think only from what I can figure out, Maurice, only in extreme cases are they making good on anything. But these other people are just constantly run through this mill and stalled out and file again. And, you know, you got to have more than this and everything else. And in the meantime, they're dying. And, of course, if they die while this claim is in process, if the mm-hmm. family isn't able to pick it up and carry it on, and many times they're not able to do that, the claim just simply goes away, and then we don't count it in statistics anywhere. You know,
I'm so glad you said that. We have a case here in Kansas City, and so I mean, when I say we have a case, well, you can multiply that, because this is one that was very close to me. It was a lady that I grew up with from childhood. She mm-hmm. worked at the plant. She had leukemia, and mm-hmm. She was going through the process, and it was a whole bunch of tragic stuff. I mean, she had to have bone marrow transplants and all this kind of good stuff, you know. And, of course, she was on a third bone marrow transplant. Now, DOE was dealing with her. DOE and the Department of Labor were dealing with her, but they had not accepted her claim all the way. But mm-hmm. they were monitoring her treatment and all this kind of good stuff. And they took her through 3 years of monitoring her treatment. The bone marrow, the third bone marrow transplant was a miracle that they found that her son could be the donor.
Okay.
What?
Oh, wow.
3 years now. They went through 3 years worth of this stuff.
Yeah.
They knew that this woman, they had to know this woman was going to die. She was in their care.
Yeah.
So they had to know that she was going to die. They finally accepted her claim. They finally accepted her claim. Sent her the papers to sign her compensation claim. Updated her white card, which would give her more medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me, told me what was going on, told me that she signed the papers, and the paper that she signed was supposed to make the deposit of her compensation into her checking account. Well, the week after she called me, she died.
Oh, Lord.
Well, you know what these people did, don't you?
Yeah, they refused to pay. Yep.
They refused to pay. And what do you mean you refused to pay?
Mm-hmm.
This woman, you did this to this woman, and you took her all that. You knew this woman was going to die. She was in your treatment, in your care. She was in their care, under their doctor. And so it's timely that you send her the acceptance, and then she dies.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has a son. And I say pay the son. Well, of
yes.
course, there's a lot to that. But at the same time, that's where we are now. And we're going to get that boy paid, too.
Good.
We're
going to
get him paid.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Maurice,
that's why
we've got
have
about...
to go to Congress.
Okay.
Okay.
We got about 4 minutes left here. In conclusion, what would you like to say?
Congress. Leadership. Be leaders. Do the right thing. Kansas City, get off of your butts and start
yes.
making some noise with me. Start making
mm-hmm.
some noise. Write Claire McCaskill. Call Senator Blunt. Call Emanuel Cleaver. And tell those people to do their job by the banners of federal complex and the people of Kansas City. Protect these people in Kansas City when they start tearing down that plant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dust is going to be blowing all over the place. I don't care what they say.
Yep.
They know what they're doing.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Maurice, I want to thank you for coming on. It is always that you've always got a ton of information and I just don't even know what to say because you know this is we're just going to see rows of dead people behind this and nobody cares.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody cares. And that bothers me more than anything. But thank you for being our guest this evening. Carly, thank you for joining in. I want to thank everybody who tuned in this evening. That was tremendous. And I want to remind you, Carly's new show airs on Tuesday night on TS Radio. It'll be number 2 on her Medical Predator show. She'll be talking about hospice and many other things. And this lady knows the subject from front to back. So call in with your questions if you got them, and
Absolutely.
We'll look forward to that. Then on Friday,
yes.
tomorrow, we're airing another new show with Tanya Hathaway. And Tanya is going to be talking about the corruption in the state of Oklahoma, which is horrendous. And so she'll be airing tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, and that'll be her first show. We're redoing everything, of course, on TS Radio and getting a new lineup going with new shows, new hosts. I'll be hanging around in the corners here and there. You're never going to get rid of me. Never. And but anyway,
yeah.
that's about it. And we'll be back Monday night, of course, but with the Abolishing Probate Show and Luann Fleming and Robin Austin join us for that. Carly joins us for that when she's able. We have a lot of show hosts who call in on that. We're networking together and trying to get the word out on this. And Maurice, I'm going to recommend you on to some other show hosts. Maurice will be on GCN Radio next Friday. We got him booked on there for next Friday, and I'll put up a link about the show he's going to be on and the time he'll be on there. So, but we'll get you on some other places, too, and help get this blown out there, Maurice, and get the word out on this. And hopefully we can get those people down there to stand up. But I want to tell you, if you can get them to get up off their butts and do something, you're doing better than we are because we can't get them to do anything but click, like, and share. You know,
we got it.
We got hundreds of thousands of keyboard warriors, but they won't stand
up.
And, you know, it gets a little disheartening after a while. But anyway,
yeah,
thanks everybody for tuning in.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just said do the right thing. Just like and share.
Yes.
Do the right thing. Maurice is like you are. Everyone is. That's whistleblowers.
Yep.
All
and
right, well,
these are whistleblowers.
You.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maurice, I appreciate you coming on, and we will follow up with you, and it won't be so long the next time either. And like I say, I'll shop you around to some other hosts, and we'll get you out there talking so people are aware of what's going on. And again, thank you everybody for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow with Tanya Hathaway. So see you all then. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.